Well, today we continue the series that we started. I mentioned earlier we are entitled Saturate. And we began talking last week about the fact that God is calling his people to saturate the world with him. Now, I want you to notice something about this title here. It says in or all in. What I want you to notice is it doesn't say in or out. It doesn't say in or out because it doesn't mean in or out. We talked last week about the fact that when we accept Jesus into our lives, he removes the penalty of sin once and for all. But there is so much more that he offers us. If you remember, we looked at the work. I hope this slide is slightly better than it was last week. I know some people, so you couldn't see what I'd put up on the slides last week. Believe me, it was a spectacular picture of a waterfall. I know that you didn't see it, but believe me, it was, and it didn't work here. But hopefully you can read this and see this. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God as the waters cover the sea. That saturation, that they will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God. That everyone, everywhere. Now, Van der Stelt puts it in practical terms for Pacifica as this. Every man, woman, and child in every place, for us, most of us, that is Pacifica. Some of us work in other places, but, you know, that means that for you, that's that place as well. Will have a daily encounter with Jesus through words spoken and deeds done through his people. That's us. So there is a saturation of the world encountering Jesus because of how he has saturated us. Because we noted that if we want God to saturate the world through us, he has first to saturate us. We have to be dripping with Jesus in order that the people who sit next to us, the people who encounter us in supermarkets, the people who we talk to, the doctor's offices we go to, whatever it is, if we are dripping Jesus, if our lives are so soaked with him, we will not be able but to encounter those people or touch those people that are around us. And we looked very practically at the way that one of the most important parts of that process, and that is our stories. Now, I'm not going to do this, but I'd love to ask how many of you have told somebody your story this week? I don't want to embarrass people. How many of you have thought about your story? How many of you have practiced your story? How many of you have grasped in a new way that your story is crucially important? Great. And last week, we had the joy of hearing Sharon's story. And I reiterate that I did not know what she was going to say, and the fact that it fitted so precisely with what the sermon I had prepared was all God and nothing to do with me or her. But this week we're going to hear Ebony's story.
I'm really nervous, so bear with me. So pastor first approached me with this. I said to my husband, what do I say? And he goes, just go up there and say, I once was lost, but now I'm found. I once was blind, but now I see. And I thought, yeah, I don't think that's going to go very well with pastor. but I truly have to say that it's a blessing to be up here. And I grew up in a Christian home. since day one. I remember going to church, and there was four of us, and we would line up and worship, and we were known as the Darrells, because the Darrell Four, because we were always, every Sunday, have a special worship. And one of the first verses that you learn as a child is John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, whoever believe in him shall not die but have everlasting life." That was one of my favorite verses when I was little. And as I got older, storms happened, divorce happened, and went to college and kind of swayed from God. Kind of decided, you know what, I'm just going to do me. I'm just going to continue going to do my education. I had it all planned out what I was going to do. And as I relocated to San Francisco with my brother, and when I got here, I just felt this tugging at my heart that God was saying, find a church, find a place to worship. And he just kept tugging at my heart and tugging at my heart. One day I said, okay, I'm going to go find a church. So I went and I found a church, and they had an amazing young adults group. And I attended it, and I went to church, and I just felt like this peace in my heart, like this is where I needed to be right now. And even though all those storms behind me, all those tears, so much had happened, God was telling me, I'm here. I'm here for you. Don't feel alone. And I said to my brother, dude, we got to go to church. Excuse me. And he's like, no, I'm not ready. And I said, yes, we do. We got to go to church. So he would come along with me sometimes. And one day he says to me, you know, I'm thinking of going because they have a baseball team. And he was a baseball fanatic. So I said, okay. Well, right before that, there was a service at church. And the pastor said, if you want to rededicate your life to God, come forward. And I went forward, and I said to him, Lord, use me. I'm here for you. My life is yours. It is no longer Ebenez. And I surrendered, and I remember crying and crying. And excuse me. One of the verses that I truly love is, then Jesus said, come to me, all who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will rest, and I will give you rest. Matthew 11:28. So I did. I surrendered it to him. And then my brother decided to come along, and lo and behold, I meet my husband. And guess what? He's a PK. I'm saying, oh, you want to make sure I stay in the Word, right? You want me to stay in the Word, so you introduced me to a PK. So I ended up getting married to him, and it was just awesome to see how God, in the midst of our marriage, 26 years together, there has been many storms, and things happening. And it's awesome to see how God just restores you every time, every time. And sometimes he's put me on my knees. And those times, I just continue to pray, I cry, and I thank God for those. Because when he does that to you, he's just simply polishing you. He's simply creating you so that you can lean on him and not on man. So for me, it's been a blessing to have my own personal relationship with him. Not my parents, not the churches, not my friends, but my own personal relationship with him. And now we have only one left in the house, and one's in Austin. And about a week ago, it snowed in Austin. And she said, Mom, I don't know if I want to go to Bible study because it's really, really cold, and I don't know. And in my heart, I said, Victoria, you need to go to Bible study. Put on a jacket and go to Bible study. And her dad was like, but if it's cold, put on a jacket and go to Bible study. So she went to Bible study, and she says, Mom, it was snowing outside, and we were worshiping God. They were singing worship songs outside in the snow. And she said, that was awesome. So that is what I leave for my kids, their relationship with God. It's very short, you know. I knew God from the beginning. I strayed from him. I came back, and I'm never leaving him again.
Thank you so much, Ebony. By the way, if you don't know what a PK is, it's a pastor's kit. I'm a PK, and there are multiple other PKs in here. And, you know, PKs have a reputation. I won't tell you what the reputation is, but we have a reputation. Okay, that's great to hear the story of a walk with Jesus. And, you know, as we said last week, nobody can knock your story. Nobody can tell you that what your experience of Jesus is not your experience. Whatever else they might have doubts about, when we talk about the things that Jesus has done in our lives, it's the most powerful witness to all that Jesus has done. Now, we saw in the disciples, when we looked at the disciples, we saw a bunch of people who Jesus had called out. We saw them, and they were definitely, in the terms of what we're looking at this morning, they were definitely in. They had definitely decided for the duration to follow Jesus. They'd been following him for about 3 years. And the reason why I question whether at the point of the point of Jesus' death they were all in is because we discover when Jesus was crucified, Peter, if you remember, says, don't know where this is going. So he says, I'm going fishing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with going fishing, but Jesus had already told Peter that he was the rock on which he was going to build the church. And now Peter's looking around and saying, well, I don't know what's going to happen now. I'm better go back to fishing. And so at that point, I question, was he all in? Or was he just in? Had he punched his ticket but not decided that it was going to be his life? Because as we saw last week, you know, Jesus deals with the penalty of sin, but tragically, as Ebony said, you know, time and time again, you slip, you drift, you do all of those things, and that's the walk with Jesus as the conquering of sin that he did on the cross becomes real in our lives. We recognize that he never leaves us, but whenever we slip or slide or whatever, he draws us back onto the road home. And so we see what Jesus does. Now, the passage that I've identified for today is in Acts chapter 2. And the reason why I've selected it is because when we get to this point, the disciples, all 11 of them plus probably 120 of them, actually, if you read the Acts carefully, that this is the description of their lives. Now, this is all in. This is a description of a community that's all in for Jesus. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper, and to prayer. That was the priority of their lives. That was the driving force behind. I'm sure they did all sorts of other things. They probably had, I'm sure many of them had jobs and all sorts of things. But this is the way their lives were described. This is all in. This is the sort of saturated that saturates other people. How did they get there? Well, I want to suggest to you that they got there because they spent time with Jesus. Because they had walked with him for 3 years. They had watched him for 3 years. They had seen so much of his life that when they came to the resurrection, they saw him risen from the dead, and they finally realized that he had, when he filled them with the Holy Spirit at Pentecost, they were all in. And if you read the account in the Acts of the Apostles, you see more and more and more about what it means to be all in. But that's what God is calling you and me to be. He's asking us, okay, are you in or are you going to be all in? Is that going to describe your life in one way or in another? Are we going to look and see what does that look like in the houses of people in Pacifica in 2020? Because I think that's the call that he has, that he places upon our lives. Well, if in order to get there, Jeff Vanderstelt in the book Saturate identifies three contexts. We're going to look at them briefly this morning. We're going to look at them a number of times, probably over the next few weeks. But firstly, we look at what is life on life. Life on life. And he describes it like this. Life that is lived up close so we are visible and accessible to one another, so that others can gently peel back the layers and join us in our restoration. The sort of relationship that we have with people who can walk with us, tell truth to us and with us, who can share the pains and the joys and the growing of what it is to be a Christian as we get transformed together into the likeness of Jesus Christ. And you know, Jesus showed us how to do that. He showed us it with Peter, James, and John. Now, it's clear if you read the Gospels that there was 12 disciples. Three of them were very special, but there's also lots and lots of other disciples who, when it comes to Acts, probably about 120, but all the way through the gospel, there are people, a big group of people that were described as disciples, as followers of Jesus. But these three were special, and this is one of the most remarkable points at which we see how special they were. Because Jesus went to the grove called Gethsemane, and he said, "Sit here while I go to pray." He took Peter and James and John. He became anguished and distressed. Now, just absorb that. He is the Son of God. He's walked with them as a human being, and I'm quite sure that they were, to a certain extent, confused as to how this being the Son of God and yet being walking with them as a human being worked out. And so we see him become extraordinarily vulnerable to them. Their master and their Lord was prepared to say he became anguished and distressed, and he showed them that. He showed them. He asked them to pray with him. He showed them their pain. He said, "My soul is crushed with grief." He had already decided he was going to do what his father told him to do. But the anticipation at this point had got to the stage where he said, "Oh, Heavenly Father, is there not a different way of doing this?" And he showed that to these three people, these three friends who had become so close to him. He was prepared to unlock his heart to show them the pain that he was going through. They had watched him submit to his Father over and over and over again. That song described it so well. He just did what his father told him to do. But at this point, he's saying, "Oh, I wish you could tell me to do something different." And at that precise moment, my friends, he is doing something which probably you and I do multiple times in the course of our lives when we say, "Lord, could it not be different? Could you not ask me for something different? Could you not ask me for something less painful?" And where does Jesus go? He goes to his three precious friends and says, this is how I'm feeling. This is where my heart is. Pray with me. And so we ask ourselves, where are those relationships in your life and my life? I have been so extraordinarily privileged to have at least three guys in my life, apart from my wife, three guys in my life who I can, who my relationship with them I can describe just like that. They have walked with me through my doubts, through my pains, through difficulties, and I have walked with them through those times. And I still do walk with them. But I tell you what, it takes time. Most of them I have been walking with for more than 20 years. But it started 20 years ago. And it started with a willingness to invest in each other's lives on a regular basis. Two of the guys who are still walking with me now, we used to meet once a week and talk about what Jesus, where we used to challenge each other to answer the question, what has God done for you in your life this week? Not last week, not last month, not last year, but what has God changed in your life this week? And, you know, I will forever be grateful for the relationships that has developed. But those sort of relationships take investment, and we have to ask ourselves, do we want them? Because let me tell you, when you ask, when you look for them and when you invest in them, you can't hide. Because these guys know me almost better than I know myself. And if I'm fudging something or I'm avoiding something, they will be the first to tell me. And I'll be the first to tell them too, because we trust each other like that. But those are the relationships which are life on life. Those are the relationships which draw us closer to Jesus in the way that Jesus drew closer to his disciples. I believe with all my heart they are irreplaceable in our walk and growth. And when you have people who are as committed to your growth as you are to theirs, painful and difficult as it is sometimes, it's worth it. It's worth every second of it. So where are those people for you? Are you willing, if you don't have them, are you willing to ask God to show you who they should be? Are you willing to ask God to help you and them invest in each other to get there? Because it won't happen by magic. It won't happen by, oh, could you be my friend? And the answer may be yes, and you may be friends. But this sort of relationship, the relationship, Jesus had 3 years of investment. He was Jesus. I can tell you, we've had 20 years of investment, but, you know, it started to get really valuable 5, 6, 7 years. I'm looking at Yomi because he's one of them. I'm not sure how I would characterize the days that it got really deep, the times that it got really deep. But you'll need to make those investments, but you will never regret it. You will never regret it. I don't care how old you are. You're never too young to start building those kind of relationships with people who want to follow Jesus as much as you do. So that's the first scenario he challenges us in the book to reach for, is life on life. The next one is life in community. life in community. And here he extends it a little bit. And his primary focus of life in community is in small groups. Now, I really love this definition of community, which Andy Crouch gave when I heard him speak recently. He said, community is a place where no one can be missing and not be noticed. No one can be missing and not be noticed. Now, it has to be an extraordinarily small church for that to be the case. And that's why I make no apology for continuing to champion the role of growth groups, of small groups. Those are the places where if you're missing, somebody will notice. Again, those are the places where it's much more difficult to hide your struggles and your difficulties and the walk that you have with Jesus. Life in community. Now, Jesus had clearly had life in community with those 12 disciples. He went to weddings with them. He went to synagogue with them. He ate with them. He visited friends with them. He traveled with them. He walked with them. He was in their lives. Now, he may not have been quite so closely in their lives as he was in the lives of the three, Peter, James, and John, but he was sure in their lives. And I believe that is why Acts 2 tells us of a community that looked the way it did. Because, you know, when Peter and John were arrested, and the authorities looked at who these guys were, the only thing they could say about them was what? That they had been with Jesus. Acts chapter 4 and 13, verse 13. The members of the council were amazed when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, for they could see that they were dripping all over everybody. No, he doesn't say that, but he says, it says they could see they were ordinary men with no special training in the scriptures. They also recognized them as men who had been with Jesus. You know, I would really love that to be said of me. The most remarkable accusation they could make of me is that he walks with Jesus. He's been with Jesus. I covet that. And you see, the evidence was there at the end of that little passage that we looked at in Acts. He said they worshiped together in the temple. They met in homes. Now, they met in homes and shared their meals with great joy and generosity, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. Don't miss that. It's not saying, and they had a great time and they felt good and they all loved each other and everything was happy, although they are saying that. What he's also saying is everybody noticed. The community around them looked at one look at them and said, whoa, these people are really different. And what's more, they're really nice. And the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. What do we talk about when we looked at that prophetic word? We asked, the word said that God was going to bring people. Where is he going to bring people to? Hopefully to a bunch of people who will love them like that, who will show them that sort of community. This is not amateur night. This is all in community. This is a community where houses are open, where meals are had, where love is shown. This is workplaces, where you behave with the people around you in such a remarkable way, especially those who you find difficult. That people look at you and say, whoa, what sort of a person are you? What sort of a community are you part of? Because I'd like to be in part of that. I'd like to be part of that sort of community that cares for each other. If you read the book, you'll find dozens of different examples which are really powerful. That says life in community turns out communities that people want to be part of. The tragedy is that right now, so many Christian communities are not attractive. In fact, they're not, most of them are not relevant. They're not different. People don't notice the difference about us. And yet, if we're called to saturate the community, whether it be the community we live in here, or if you're going to go off to Hope College, or you go wherever you're going to go, if you're going to saturate that community with Jesus, and you are saturated with Jesus, these sort of relationships are a must. I know a few people who have really begun to walk with Jesus in radical ways who have not been parts of some form of small group, some form of group of people who clearly want to invest in their lives and want to invest in other people's lives with them. Because that's the second part of it. If you're in community, then you're called to be community. And the third part of the third context is what he calls it, life on mission. So we have life on life, where we are close to people who hold us accountable, who don't let us get away with anything. We are part of a community where we love each other, we invest in each other, and we reach out together, and we learn what it's like to be on mission, because Jesus said, he called them out, and he said, I will show you how to fish for people. He's saying to them, watch me. Watch me, and I'll show you. You see, here's the great thing. Jesus exhibited every single one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. There's not a single one that you won't see exhibited by Jesus in the pages of the Gospels. We don't have them all. That's why we need each other. That's why we need each other. Because all of us need to be exercising the gifts. And when we see a gift and training each other, encouraging each other, asking each other, holding each other accountable so that we can be on mission. So that just as Jesus said, because what did Jesus say? Go into all the world, make disciples, teaching them everything. Do what he did. And we need to be seeking places where we can be taught. Because some people have learned some things that we haven't yet learned. And we need to be willing and humble enough to ask for help and actually be humble enough to give help. My family always laugh at the fact that I say I like to play dumb farmer. Which means that I like to, if I think somebody knows a lot more than me about something, I love to act as if I'm a complete idiot. And you know why? Because people love to share with complete idiots. People love to explain how to do something to a complete idiot. If I tell them how much I know and I just want a little bit of help, you know, nobody wants to give you too much help. But if we share with one another, I'm not saying that we all have to be complete idiots. You can reserve that for me. But if we recognize that there are things that we can teach each other, and we ask, please, can you show me, can I come with you? Can I listen to you? Can I see how you do this in order that I might be able to do it better? That's how we come to be on mission. And I want to show you a couple of things where we notice something about Jesus' mission. Mark chapter 1. This is Jesus is like in an amazingly successful missionary context. He's just the last night he was preaching to people, he was healing people, everybody's coming and knocking at the door. Everybody wants to be part of a piece of Jesus at this time. So what does he do? First of all, he goes off and prays. And then suddenly said, I think he's up that hill. So off they go to find him. What does he say? Oh, I'm coming back. Yes, yes, yes. This is a wonderful missionary ministry opportunity. No, he says, my father has told me to go somewhere else. Regardless of what it might seem to be good, we must go to other towns. So the first thing Jesus teaches his disciples here is that focus on what the Father asks you to do, not on what seems like a good idea. There are lots of things that seem like good ideas to me, but maybe, just maybe, God has other ideas. And then the story of the woman at the well. Well, the disciples went off shopping, came back and found, if you know the story, they came back, they got some food. Jesus had already said he's going to go through Samaria, which he wasn't supposed to do, but he did it, and he came to the well, and he sent them off shopping to get some dinner. And when they come back, he's talking to a woman stood by the well. Well, there was so much wrong with that. He shouldn't have been talking to a woman by herself. He shouldn't have been talking to a Samaritan woman. You name it, he was doing it wrong. And yet Jesus showed them that when we walk with him, we should expect the unexpected. There are times when he will tell us to do things that otherwise might seem ridiculous or wrong. Be careful to make sure that he's telling you those things, but be ready when they happen. And then lastly, there's this wonderful story where the parents bring their children to Jesus. And the disciples said, oh, no. You see, children were a pain in their culture. Children should be seen and not heard. They really took that to a great extent. And yet, what did Jesus do? He said, no. Disciples, you've got to learn. You can't push people away from me. However inconvenient it might seem, you can't push people away from me. There are no exclusions around Jesus. Now, those are just three of the lessons that Jesus taught when he said, I will show you how to fish for people. I will show you how to fish for people. So we look for life on life. We look for life in community, and we look for life on mission. And every one of us has a part of each one of those. So what does it look like for us? Well, life on life looks like life being with Jesus. And make sure we understand that that comes first. If we don't know what it is to be with Jesus, if we don't know what it is to spend time in quiet, alone with Jesus, then we live a dangerous life. The other things which are going to follow, we are so much better protected when we have spent time alone listening to what Jesus says. It's so tempting to jump to some of the other things, to jump to the place where we're doing something. And yet maybe God wants to say, no, I don't want you to do it that way. Or maybe even I don't want you to do that. I've got something different. So when we live life on life. Now, again, I'm going to ask you this question. Are you willing if you don't have those sort of friends already, are you willing to ask God to provide them for you? And if he does, are you willing to make the investment of time that deepens that relationship? Are you willing to open your heart up? Are you willing to be vulnerable? Are you willing to be honest? Are you willing not to hide in order that the blessing that God wants to bring us and the blessing that he wants to share with others might be real in your life? Secondly, are you willing to find and invest in a community, a small community, a small group, which is part of, that's why at the beginning of the podcast that David and I record each week, we say we believe that growing as a Christian happens better in circles than in rows. We start here, but if you want the things to change in your life, then get in a circle. Get in a circle with people who are different than you, who see things differently than you, who understand things differently than you, and maybe they will show you something you haven't seen before. And maybe you'll show them something they haven't seen before. Get in small groups, because that is the most effective way of growing. And then it is also so powerful when we serve God together in small groups. And it's also, you can bring people. Sometimes it's much easier to bring somebody who's not yet a Christian into your small group than it is to bring them here. But come here later. Ask Stephanie. That people will be part of small groups, get to know one another, and then it feels so much safer to come here when there's six or seven people that you know and you know well. And then we begin to grow together and we begin to be on mission together. And lastly, do what Jesus did. Now, Matthew 25 provides us with so many incredible opportunities to do that. And so much of this I see in this church family. I see it happening here. But I believe that God is calling us to more and more. Matthew 25 opposites that. But that's why I say to you, if you jump to Matthew 25, you're doing it, I would suggest, that it making you feel better. But when you've been with Jesus, you can't not do things. It may not be Matthew 25. I mean, our small group goes to Casa Pacifica. There's all sorts of other things going on. You ask God what he wants you to do to serve. But you will do it because you can't not do it. Because of what Jesus has done for you. You can't not do it. Because he's given you so much. So life on life, life in community, and life on mission. Those are the things that he is calling us to do. He is calling us to do. So let me ask you, each one of you, what is God asking you to do in each of those categories? Where is God asking you to rearrange your schedule so you are absolutely sure that you're going to spend time with Jesus? Where is he asking you to continue or find ways in which you will engage with community in a way that will grow you and enable you to share with others? And where is he asking you to do what Jesus did? Because when we all ask ourselves those questions, we will be changed. And we will be changed from being in to all in. Because when we do all of those things, you cannot but be all in. And it will be those things that dictate and drive the schedules, the bank accounts that we have, all of those things. And we will be beginning to be prepared for whatever God is going to bring us. I believe Singh is absolutely right. God is preparing us for a move of God that we don't know what it looks like, but he is asking us to be ready, and this is how to get ready. This is how I need to get ready. This is how you need to get ready. Are we willing? Let's pray.